I've enjoyed coming up for these few days and getting to meet you. I've enjoyed your kindness. The man that raised my daddy was from Kentucky. So they can't be all bad. He was a Baptist preacher. I'm in the 15th chapter of the Gospel of Luke, verse number 11, and he said, a certain man had two sons. And the younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the portions of goods that falleth to me. And he divided unto them his living. And not many days after, the younger son gathered all together and took his journey into a far country. And there wasted his substance with riotous living. And when he had spent all, there arose a mighty famine in that land, and he began to be in want. And he went and joined himself to a citizen of that country, and he sent him into his fields to feed swine. And he would fain had filled his belly with the husk that the swine did eat. No man gave unto him. And when he came to himself, he said, how many hired servants of my father's have bread enough and to spare, and I perish with hunger? I will arise and go to my father and will say unto him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before thee, and am no more worthy to be called thy son. Make me as one of thy hired servants. And he arose, came to his father. But when he was yet a great way off, his father saw him, and had compassion, and ran, and fell on his neck, and kissed him. And the son said unto him, Father, I have sinned against heaven, and in thy sight, and am no more worthy to be called thy son. But the father said to his servants, bring forth the best robe, and put it on him, and put a ring on his hand, and shoes on his feet. Bring hither the fatted calf and kill it. Let's eat and be merry. For this my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. And they began to be merry. Now his elder son was in the field, and as he came and drew nigh to the house, he heard music and dancing. See, they were Methodists. Unless you get happy, a happy Baptist can dance pretty good. And he called one of his servants and asked what these things meant. And he said unto him, thy brother's come. Thy father hath killed the fatted calf, because he hath received him safe and sound. And he was angry, would not go in. Therefore came his father out and entreated him. And he answering said to his father, lo, these many years do I serve thee, neither transgressed I at any time thy commandment, and yet thou never gavest me a kid, that I might make merry with my friends. But as soon as this thy son was come, which hath devoured thy living with harlots, thou hast killed for him the fatted calf. He said unto him, son, thou art ever with me, and all that I have is thine. It was meet that we should make merry and be glad, for this thy brother was dead and is alive again, and was lost and is found. Did you know, in every preacher's ministry, There are unforgettable services. Now, I've been in some services that I just forgot of. But I've been in some services in my life that I will never forget. And I can imagine, I can only imagine the people that were in the service the day that our Lord preached this sermon. For the Bible said the multitudes had came, and with them came the publicans and the sinners and the scribes and the Pharisees. And there was a massive multitude of people there the day that our Lord stood up and preached this sermon. And I would imagine that the people that were there and heard him never forgot the day that they was in that service to hear our Lord preach the prodigal son. I was with a man in Memphis, Tennessee, 25 years ago. We went and visited a man in a nursing home, and he had been in a Billy Sunday revival when he was a young man. He was an old man, and he never forgot the service. He always remembered that service. These people, they died. When they died, they told their children, you should have been there the day that Jesus preached that prodigal son. In every preacher's ministry, there's not only unforgettable services, but there are unforgettable sermons. There are some sermons I've heard people preach I'm never going to forget. Now, I've heard some of them preach, and I forgot them pretty quick. Never told anybody even heard them. And they're not on record. In 1979, when I joined St. Edgar's Baptist Church, there was a tape that circled among us young preachers in that church of Jack Hiles preaching his message on fresh oil. And we listened to that sermon over and over and over, and all of us would find our little corners. And if you ever heard that sermon and you've got a thirst for God, you'll find you a place and bow on your face, and you'll beg God for fresh oil. Never forgot that sermon. R.G. Lee preaching that sermon, Payday Someday. You can still get it on the internet. Unforgettable sermon. I was in a camp meeting in 1977 at Greenwood Village Baptist Church, and old Dr. J. Harold Smith got up and preached that message on God Three Deadlines. It was over 1,000 people in that service, and I saw over 300 people flood them altars. Never have I forgot that service. Never have I forgot that sermon. Jonathan Edwards preached that message, Sinners in the Hands of an Angry God. Did you know America's never forgot that sermon? They teach that sermon in colleges all over America. My wife was a high school English teacher for 31 years, and they even taught it in her lifetime. Unforgettable sermon. Billy Sunday preached the message. He said he preached it 1,000 times, 100 times, called Hot Cakes on the Griddle. He said thousands of people walked the Sawdust Trail to shake his hand. But among all them great sermons and all them great preachers, can we rank the Lord Jesus up there with them? I don't think he was a slouchy preacher. I'm telling you, people were amazed. They were amazed when they heard our Lord preach. The Bible even goes so far to say that no man ever spake like that man. He must have been a great, great preacher. I bet when people sat and listened to him, I bet they hung on every word. I can't even imagine getting in a pulpit without notes, but Jesus never took notes into the pulpit. I mean, he always knew what he was going to preach, and he always knew who was going to be there. He always knew the problems in everybody's heart. He always knew what everybody needed, and he could just get up there and preach, and boy, that makes me jealous. I got to have all kinds of help. When he got up to preach, can you imagine the liberty that he had to speak? I bet people didn't get up and go to the bathroom when he was preaching. I bet nobody nodded off. I bet they hung on, I bet they leaned up in their seats and just hung on every word. Can you imagine the light that must have shone? Have you ever been listening to a man preach and he speaks from a text and you say, oh, I've never seen that before. That's that light of the scriptures that's coming through that word. And I can only imagine when the Lord preached, the light that would shine and people said, man, I've read that Old Testament and I've never seen that. Can you imagine sitting there listening to him and you can literally, you could feel in your soul, you could feel the love of God. You could sense and discern. Your heart would just reach out and respond saying, God does love me. Can you imagine going to one of his services with lust hidden in your heart? You know, we all, a lot of folks, they got lust hidden back there that nobody knows about that they can hide behind a shirt, the tie, the smile, the Bible. But when the Lord got up to speak, that light would shine down in the dark chambers of that heart, and you could sense and feel that he knew that lust was in your heart, and you wanted to do like in Pharisees, you wanted to flee out the back door, but you dared to move. The sermon that he preached on the prodigal son, I can't imagine him only preaching it one time. We just have glimpses of 3 years of his ministry. But the Lord preached, he had to preach this sermon hundreds of times. I want to believe that it was probably the most requested sermon that he preached. George Whitefield said that a sermon's not even any good till after you've preached it 40 times. And the Bible, John said, there's not enough books written to write down everything that he said or did. And I can just imagine, you know the father that had the lunatic son and he brought him to Jesus? If there was one father that had a lunatic son, there were hundreds of fathers that had lunatic sons. That wasn't the only one. And I can just see them fathers that were bringing them sons that kept falling in the fire and they kept falling in the water. And I can see them fathers bringing those children into that crowd saying, Lord, would you preach that message on the prodigal again? And then here comes the mother. If there's one mother, the Syrophoenician mother that's got a daughter vexed with the devil, well, if there's one mother that's got a daughter vexed with the devil, there are hundreds of mamas. It's got daughters vexed with devils. And I can see them mamas bringing them girls. I can see them mamas coming into that service, and I can see them stand up and say, Lord, would you preach that message on the prodigal again? The sermon's been preached for 2,000 years. Can you imagine these words, this sermon, for 2,000 years, man has stood in a pulpit somewhere and preached a sermon. It's not new. It's not something that I put together in Texas and brought to Kentucky. God has been preaching this for 2,000 years. I'm sure among independent Baptists, you've all heard of J. Frank Norris, that great Texas preacher that was probably the instigator of all of us crazy independents because he loved to fight everything in the world. J. Frank Norris, at one time, he just quit the ministry. He got tired of the fight in the church, and he got tired of the hassle of the ministry, so he quit. About the time he was deciding to quit, a man in Kentucky called him to preach a revival. So J. Frank Norris comes up here, and he brought his Bible, brought a few notes, and he came, and he said, I didn't even have a desire to preach. And he had an open-air meeting in a brush arbor. And he said he sat on the front row there, and he just kept, he said, I knew I was fixing to preach, but I had no desire to preach. He said, I don't even know what I didn't come for. And the preacher came and sat down beside him, and he said, Brother Norris, he said, you see that man in the back? He's got the cowboy hat on, got a red bandana, got spurs on them boots. He said, that's the baddest man in the county. He said, if we can win him, he said, we can open the door to many souls. J. Frank Norris said he got up in the pulpit, he opened up that Bible, and he just began to read the prodigal son. The same words that we just read. And he said halfway through the reading of it, He said he heard a rustle among the crowd, and he looked up, and here come that cowboy down the aisle. He said he never got near the altar, and he just collapsed on his knees and began to weep uncontrollably out loud. People began to cry. People began to shout. People began to flood the altars. And O.J. Frank Norris, that service lasted till 3 o'clock in the morning. And he said when that service was finally over and there were so many people saved, he said, I am getting back in the ministry. The prodigal son's been preached for thousands of years. The sermon's won more souls than probably any sermon that the Lord preached. It's been read over and prayed over by millions. I have taken that prodigal son and laid it down on the end of my bed. I have bowed my knees, and I have read every sentence and stopped and wept and prayed for my own prodigal children in hopes that this father, that me as a father, can enjoy the joy that this father had. It's been lived by us all in one way or another, hasn't it? The prodigal son is a story, is a sermon that never grows old. I've preached sermons, and after about 10 times, the Lord said, I'm through with that. But the prodigal son never grows old. Because you see, somewhere there's a father with a grieving heart. Somewhere there's a father that's got a heart that's broken because he's got a prodigal child. Somewhere there's a mother in the background with her face hidden, praying out of sight. The sermon never grows old because somewhere there's a prodigal child that's gathering all. They're in the house, and they're arguing with the dad. Give me the goods. That's what that son said. I want the goods. They're arguing. Somewhere there's a prodigal son. The son left home, and he's out there and enjoying the sin for a season. He is having himself a time. Somewhere there's a prodigal son that's out there, he's done hit bottom, and he wants out. He just don't know what to do yet. Somewhere there's a prodigal son that's on his way home. He's done come out, and he's making his way home. The prodigal son is a divine sermon. You know what makes it divine? Look who preached it. All right, that'll make it divine. Every sentence in the prodigal son is a sermon. You can take every sentence and make a text out of it. I found an old book. It said, entered into the Library of Congress, 1862. There was a man by the name of E.P. Rogers that pastored the Dutch Reformed Protestant Church in New York City back in 1862. And he wrote a book called Sinner's Departure, Sinner's Return. And he had 8 sermons on these 15 sentences in this story. Every word in the prodigal son is instructions for life. Every word in the prodigal son proceeded out of the mouth of God. You could take every word that's in the prodigal son and build a sermon. You could take the word far, just the word far, and you could preach on how far have you gone? How far will you go? How far are you? Did you go very far? You could take the word spent, and you could preach on what he spent. He spent his money. He spent his morals. He spent his mother's love. You could take the word joined, and he joined up with the citizens of that far country. You could take the word sinned, and my heavens, what you could do with that word. You could take the word heaven. And oh, what you could do with the word heaven. You could take the word music and what you could do with the word music. Every word in the prodigal son is a sermon. Every character that's in the prodigal son is somebody that you know. We all know of a father that's got a prodigal child. We know him. We know how he speaks often to that child. We know how his heart feels. We all know of a son that has left a father that is out there. And he's in the far country, and he's in the hog pen. We know one. We know of a citizen that's out there that's God, that it's enlisting all those boys and girls that come into that far country. There stands the citizen to take them and pull them deeper in. We know them. We know of a brother that has a brother that's in the prodigal, that's in the far country. And then there's one other character in verse number 16 that doesn't get mentioned much, and that's old no man. Old no man. You see, no man is the one that won't help you when you're down. He's a no man. Oh, you'll get out there, but if you do, you'll run into no man. He's the one that won't give you a helping hand when you need one, and even when you ask, he's a no man. He's the one that, he's out there, but he lives off everybody else. No man. He's the one that'll help you get in trouble and then leave you when you get in trouble. Oh, he's a no man. Everything in the prodigal son is drama. We like drama, don't we? And everything in the prodigal son is drama. The father's house, there's the drama of the friction between the father and the son. The arguments and the avoidance and the frustration, it's drama. The strife, the tension, the conflict. And in the far country, nothing but drama, the struggle to survive. Well, God just gives us a glimpse of what he goes through. And the brother said, oh, he's out there with them harlots. My heavens, what you could even imagine, the drama of what he's doing in the far country. Then there's the famine, the drama of the famine. He's starving. He's got no money. He's got nobody to help him. And he looks down at the shucks of a corn cob, and he just said, oh, my God, they're eating better than I am. And then there's the drama of forgiveness. Oh, there's no other place in the Bible where there is more emotions and drama as when a father and a son finally come back together. The story, if you read it careful and slow with your imagination thought, it keeps you on the edge of your seat. It's a page turner of a book. Every emotion that you and I experience, you can find in the prodigal son. If you're looking for love, you can find it in the prodigal son. That father loving a son after all he said, and after all he did, you tell me, when that father led him back into his arms, back into his house, you tell me that that's not love? That is love at its best. Taking the best robe he's got and putting it on a nasty life, that's love. I mean, the boy ain't even cleaned up yet. He put the best robe on him. That's love. Kissing a filthy neck. That's love. Boy, if you want a picture of salvation in the prodigal son, that's salvation when that father bends down and kisses that filthy neck. Oh, that is love at its best. If you're looking for the emotion of hate, the son's disrespect for a good father. Don't you? If you read the prodigal son with emotions and time and thought, you want to grab that boy and just shake him. What's wrong with you, son? That is a good father. I know a lot of kids that don't have good fathers, but this boy had a good father. He was a good man. He made sure them boys had everything. You can tell by the way he acts that he was a good father. And that boy looks up and he said, give me the good. You want to just slap him. You do. I mean, it builds up hate in you. Pushing those hateful words at a father. Give me. And then the emotion of pity. What the father endures. Look at the heartache. Don't you pity the father? Look at the sleepless nights. Look at the secret weeping that father does that nobody sees. Then there's the emotional sadness to watch your father look at the front door day after day after day. That was the last place he saw his son. That was the last place that he saw that son when he walked through that door. And every day that that father got up, he would look at that door. How do you know that? Because he was looking at the door when the boy started back. That father, you just feel sadness. Because that father's heart would break every time he looked at that door. To watch his son, and the devil is the master of making sure that whatever that prodigal son is doing out in the far country, the devil's a master of making sure that those deeds come back into the house. And the father hears, and the father knows what that son is doing. I mean, it's sadness. And then there's laughter. If you're looking for some laughter there's laughter in there. Have you ever watched an old man dance? When that boy came home and that father began to just, whoa, my son's alive. My son's not dead. Whoa, I feel good. And that old daddy and them old servants stood around and started clapping, saying, go, daddy, go. Go, daddy, go. While everybody in the whole place just burst out laughing. There's laughter. There's weeping. At the sight of a father running. The sight of a father hugging. The sight of a father kissing and weeping on that boy's neck. And then there's pain. Watching that father watch his son leave home. And that boy never looked back. When he walked through that door, he never looked back. That door slammed. He never looked back. He never waved goodbye. He never said a word. And that father's heart broke and stayed broke for a long time. And then, like every good story, don't you love a story that ends with merry and happiness and glad? Good endings make good stories. Good endings make good books. Good endings make good movies. But it's a happy ending. The heartache ends in joy. There's happiness. He made his way back home. And just like Dorothy said, there's no place like home. And the prodigal son is more than just dogma and doctrine. But you know, the prodigal son is a story. The prodigal son is a gospel story. But then, really, when you think about it, isn't the gospel a story? We all have a story. If you haven't got a story, you're not saved. For the gospel is a story. We all have a gospel story, just like the prodigal son. We know where we were at when the gospel found us. We know what we were doing when the gospel came to us. We know how we were living. We remember the day we remember when we came to ourselves. We remember the story. We know what the gospel has done for us. What a story. To stop right now and have a testimony service. And everybody can stand. Everybody can stand and tell when the gospel came and what it's done. When the first time you heard the gospel. I was 5 years old in 1951. And I can still remember the day in my life when I heard the name Jesus Christ for the first time. I was a five-year-old boy. My mother and father had divorced. We had been passing around to every aunt and uncle all over the country. We ended up in Fort Worth, Texas with my Aunt Ann and Uncle Mac. My cousin Marcia was 16 years old, and she had muscular dystrophy. She had crippled legs, and she had crippled arms. But my cousin Marcia had got saved at an old Assembly of God church in downtown Fort Worth. And that old crippled girl would drag him legs, and she loved God. I still got pictures in my mind of her going to that altar when I was a five-year-old boy. And she took them crippled arms and would wrap them around me and pull me up in her lap. And she would just hold me. And she began to tell me stories. She'd say, Chipper, that's what they called me as a kid. She'd say, Chipper. Said, Jesus is coming back one day. Said, them clouds are going to roll back like a scroll. He said, Chipper, when Jesus comes back, said, the lion is going to lay down with the lamb. 1951, she said, when Jesus comes back, she said, you'll be able to walk down the street and hold the hair on the chin of the lion. She said, Chipper, when Jesus comes back, you'll be able to ride on the back of alligators. And I'm 5 years old, and I'm going out in the front lawn saying, Jesus, would you come back? I wanted to ride alligators. But and for the next 20-something years of my life, when I got all out in sin, I never got away from my crippled-up cousin Marcia telling me about Jesus coming back. The first time I ever heard, what a story that we have to tell. Curtis McCarty, the old North Carolina preacher that was contemporary with Oliver B. Green, in 1971, he was preaching a revival in Pasadena, Texas. And my sister-in-law invited me in. Now, I'm just 21 years old and somewhere around that anyway. And I had never been exposed to the power of the gospel. I'd never been exposed to preaching. And there I sit and in this service, and old Curtis, that old North Carolina preacher, got up. And boy, he began to stomp up there on that platform. He just stomped. And boy, he would preach and sweat. And that power of God swept through that thing. And I know you've heard the stories of people that were grabbing the pews. Listen, that story's true. I did it. I literally grabbed that pew. I could feel the Holy Ghost pulling me to that altar. But I wouldn't go. But I remember the conviction and I remember the tug. What a story. James Hadley called me the other day. I don't even remember. He said, he's associate pastor of the Westworth Baptist Temple in Fort Worth, Texas. He said, in 1984, he said, you led me to the Lord. He said, my life's changed. And he said, I got a wife, 5 children. I'm the associate pastor of this church. And I don't even remember it. But what a story we have to tell. This prodigal son's not the only one with a story. We all got a story. All the emotions of the prodigal son, we have them. When we stand to tell our story, many of us begin to weep. Many of us, our heart breaks and our words tremble because that story is emotional. The gospel is a story in our soul. It's a story to tell. So here's Jesus. He's got the multitudes that come to hear him. They've all gathered up. So he stands up before this mighty multitude of people. And he says, I want to tell you a story. He said, I want to tell you a story about a father. I want to tell you a story about a father's house. I want to tell you a story about his 2 sons, 2 brothers, 2 boys, 2 children. He said, these father's boys, they grew up real fast. You want to know how fast them boys grew up? Did you know in verse 11 it said that a certain man had 2 sons, and in verse 12, they're already leaving home. Boy, they weren't there long, were they? And for those of us who's raised children, they didn't stay long. They didn't stay young long, did they? Don't you wish you could have put a brick on their head or just kept them small when they loved you and listened to you and obeyed? Oh, that they ever had to grow up. So cute when they were young. They thought I was God. They grew up and found out I wasn't. But they grew up in such a hurry. Kids don't stay young long. They don't stay babies long. They don't stay little long. They grow up in a hurry. They grew up in one verse. And if anybody ever raised boys, boys will do anything. I mean, these 2 brothers, can you see these 2 brothers growing up on the farm, the things they did, the things they pulled on one another? My daughter lived in Dallas with me. She had 4 children. She had 2 boys, Hunter and Cole. Had a 2-story house. And these 2 boys, Hunter and Cole, man, don't turn these 2 boys loose anywhere without supervision. They got up there and locked themselves up in the bathroom, above the living room. And they got their toys and they put them in the toilet. They started flushing it. And the water just started overflowing. Oh, they sat there and laughed. They thought that was the funniest thing in the world. It's laughed. Boy, this is not long. Water's dripping through the sheetrock in the living room on Mom and Dad. And the next time I go up there, they've cut holes in the sheetrock and got it all patched up. Boy, and it looks like a checkerboard, the ceiling of the house. Boys will do anything. And these boys, listen, they would just do anything. Jesus said they grew up on a farm. There was a calf on that farm, wasn't there? Wasn't there a fatted calf? Well, that fatted calf had to have a mama cow. So these boys grew up with cows and calves. If you got cows, you got to milk them. You got to milk a mama cow. You got to get up every morning, 4:30. You got to milk it. You got to come in from school. You got to milk that cow. And then they had fields. If you got cows, you got to feed them. And the story said that they had fields. And anybody knows you got to have a hay field to feed the cow. You got to have corn field to take the corn to put in the feed to make the cow rich. So these boys, they had cows to milk, they had cornfields, and if you got a cornfield, it just don't grow by itself. You got to plant it. You got to hoe it. You got to stay out in the hot sun. You got to plow it. You got to harvest it. There's no days off on the farm. A cow don't understand if you say, I'm going on a vacation. Cows want to be milked every day. There's no days off on the farm. These boys, when other kids were going to the Dairy Queen to chase the girls, these boys had to go home, go to work. While other people were playing, they had to go home, do the chores. Jesus said, but one of them boys was a fast young son. See, he grew up way too fast. He grew up so fast, he got wiser than the old man. He got tired of the farm. Got tired of getting up every morning. Got tired of the smell of cows. Got tired of the cornfields. Got tired of the hay fields. He got tired of being told what to do. So he just walks out. Walks out on a father, a good father. He walks out on a good home. Walks out on a farm. He takes a little suitcase. Got him a little money. Got a lot of friends. That's big dreams. Jesus continues with his story. He said, but while that son's leaving, I want you to look back at that father's heart. He said, there's times in the life of a father, there's seasons of gladness. There's times when it's just fun being a father. To spend time with those children and to watch them grow. There's just times and seasons of gladness, and you just hate it when those happy times pass away and gladness becomes seasons of grief. It's not easy raising children. Adam and Eve had two boys, and it's just not easy. It's never been easy to raise kids. Word begins to drift home about the hog pens and the harlots and the husks. And that father would go to that bedroom of that boy, and he'd look in that bedroom, and he remembered when that boy was sleeping in that bed, that soft bed with a pillow. And he thinks about him out there in that hog pen with nothing to eat and all that slime with all them evil people. And he thinks about what he had and what he's got. And if you know anything about farmers are tough men. Farmers are tough guys. What makes a farmer, what makes an old farmer tough? He has survived everything. He survived droughts on the farm. He survived hard winters. He has survived storms that came and washed his crops away and he has to replant. He's watched his animals die. Various diseases, hard times. Anybody that is on a farm, you go through hard times. Floods come. And so the old, tough old farmer, and normally if you work all day on a farm, you don't have no trouble sleeping at night. You work all day, you don't need to take no Tylenol PM. And that pillow, you and that pillow, you can hug it. The farmer can come in after a long day and he can just lay his head back on that pillow. But the tough old farmer can't sleep now. And he begins to be sorrowful and very heavy. And he goes out on the front porch of his farmhouse in the middle of the night when he used to could sleep. And he sits there on that chair and he just looks out into those starry skies. counts the stars. And then he gets up and he goes out to the garden all alone, and he just falls on his face, and you can hear him cry, my Father, and he just cries time and time again. And he would say, oh, how often would I have gathered my children like a hen gathers a brood, he said, but they would not. And then Jesus, the people are spellbound by now. The people are just glued on every word. And he continues, he said, and then that son that left that good father, he's out there in the far country. That far country is far from the Father's house. It's far from the Father's heart. And the far country is a place of misery. It's a place of misery. There's swine out there. And swine are the slime of life. Swine are the most unthankful animals on the farm. I told you the story this morning, but I have risked my life time and time again to go out into the woods to where a mama sow goes out and has her little piglets out in the woods, and boy, the foxes and coyotes are, and you go out there to rescue that mama's piglets, and that mama wants to eat you alive. You're trying to rescue the kids. And you go, you wade out into the mud and everything to feed them, and to this day, I've never had a pig look up at me and say, thank you. Never have. And I've given my life to the hog. They never have ever thanked me. They're unthankful. They're selfish. All they want is for you to feed them. It's the smell. The swine is the smell of nasty friends. It's a far country. Sin out there takes you away from your family. The sin of that far country, it takes your freedom away. You think you're going to enjoy freedom, but it takes that away. It takes away the fun of life. But there's one good thing about the far country. The memories that it brings. Nothing will bring fond memories like misery. Misery makes the mind go looking for better times. Misery makes the mind go back down memory lane looking for good people and good times and better situations. And that old prodigal son gets out there, and boy, his life becomes so miserable that his mind starts going back down memory lane. He can't even sleep at night. And he stops along the way to remember the good times and remember the laughter and remember the dancing and remember the good food. And if you go back down memory lane far enough, you always end up stopping in front of the old home place. And there in his mind, he's just standing there looking at the front door. Does the sound of a screen door ever remind you of home? I grew up with a screen door. And there is nothing that sounds more like home than just the sound of a slamming screen door. I got to missing it so bad I put one on the back of my house. It doesn't do nothing. I just like to hear it. I do. I just like to hear it slam. I go out there now and just slam. And here the old boy is. He's laying in the far country. He's looking at the front door house, and he's listening to a screen door slam. He's staring in the windows. In his memory, he's trying to find a place to get some rest. And in his memory, he begins to think of home, and he looks in the window, and he sees the family table. And he can see the food on that family table to the point that he can smell it. He can smell that fried chicken in the home pen. He can smell the food. He can remember the Saturday night music. He can remember the Saturday night dancing and the laughter. He can remember it. Jesus says, I must bring my sermon to a close. He said, but I want you to look at the forgiveness. There's no place in the Bible where you can witness forgiveness like the prodigal son. A father and a son that's been estranged so long. And to see them come and fall on each other's neck and put their arms around each other, and they're holding each other so tight that they don't want to turn loose. And then you hear the medley of sounds, the sound of kissing and weeping and sobbing and sighs and groans and laughing. All the emotions are coming up at once. And then the father's got his arm around that son, and he's walking towards that family table where that you can smell the grill. Listen, the smell of a grill is a smell of home. That's the best smell in the world, is the smell of a grill. It's got to be the smell of heaven. Wood burning in a grill and meat cooking. Ah, it's heaven. And that boy is walking over there, and boy, all was piled upon that table. There's that fatted calf cut up. There's the barbecue. There's the ribs. There's the potato salad and the sweet potatoes and the cornbread and the beans and the pecan pie. Man, it's all spread out there. And just as that old boy gets near that table, here comes the fiddler. The fiddler comes around the end of the corner of the house. Boy, he strikes that chord and starts playing the green, green grass a hole. All of a sudden, somebody jumps up and says, down the lane I look, and there comes Sonny. Boy, the dad all of a sudden grabs the cook, and the servant grabs the son, and the maid grabs the farmhand, and the dancing begins, and there's nothing like dancing in a barnyard. And if you're looking for the Holy Ghost in that sermon, there's where he's at. In the midst of all that happiness and glee, my son's found, my son's alive, my son's come home. Did you know there's nothing like mending fences? You know there's nothing like saying, I'm sorry. Nothing like it. There's nothing like saying, I've sinned. Nothing like it. There's nothing like hugging a mama. Ain't nothing like hugging a daddy. Nothing like it. You see, if this sermon was a movie, by now we'd all be weeping. If the sermon was a novel, we'd pray that. You ever been reading a good book and you wish it never end? That's the way this prodigal son is. You wish it never end. My father never raised me. But my father was in my life. He put us in that orphan's home, and Dad had a little old 3 acres, 20 miles from that orphan's home, and he'd come out and see us as much as he could. And in 1964, my daddy bought a brand new blue and white Ford truck. My father thought that Ford was the heartbeat of America. He thought if anybody bought anything but a Ford, they was messing up. He just Ford mad. And my father was going to let me one day drive his brand new 1964. I'm 16 years old. And he got me behind the wheels, and we were coming back from Fort Worth visiting an old cousin of his. And Dad's truck was a standard. And if you know anything about standards, if you don't hit that clutch right when you shift, it makes the awfulest grinding noise you ever heard in your life. You think, if you don't hit it right, you think that that truck is being torn in half. The grinding of that metal, I'm telling you, it sends chills up your... I mean, it is the worst sound in the world. And I come out of that driveway and took off. And when I come out of first into second, I missed the clutch. And boy, the grind. My daddy cussed me for 10 miles. I never heard my daddy talk like that. My father said words that I dare not even ever repeat. 10 miles. Then my father wouldn't even look at me for another 10 miles. My father wouldn't even talk to me for another 10 miles. By this time, my old heart is done filled up with such hurt. I said, my father, he don't love me no more. My father, he's mad at me. My father never talked to me again. Well, just about the time that my father was getting over that, I tried to pass a car on a hill on the left side and met a car coming. When I did, I had to hit the ditch on the left side to keep from having a head-on collision. My father got out of that car, got out of that truck. He stood in front of it and just stared in the windshield, looking at me. The longer he looked, oh, I tell you, my heart wanted to just run and hide. My daddy walked up to the top of the hill, and he stood up at the top of the hill, and he looked down one way, and he looked back at that truck. He looked back down that hill on the other side, and he looked back down at the truck. Finally, my father waved me to the top of the hill. My dad got in that car, got in the truck as we took off again. And I didn't think my father would ever, ever love me again. I didn't think my father would ever talk to me again. I didn't think my father would ever look at me again. I didn't think my father would ever, ever let me drive that truck again. But you know what I learned about fathers that day? Fathers are strange creatures. Did you know a father can kiss you and kick you at the same time? And there's not nobody else that can do that. A father can love you and lick you at the same time. They're strange. I'm telling you, fathers are strange people. They can get mad and have mercy at the same time. And my father, in spite of grinding the gears and in spite of almost killing him, my dad, my father, let me drive the truck again. He sat beside me. He talked to me. He loved me. He looked at me. He even spoke to me. And if you get down at the end of the prodigal son, do you know what Jesus is saying? Jesus is trying to tell the world and the prodigal that God is a father. He's more than just a God that sits in the heavens with judgment on his mind and wrath. That God is a father. And you can keep grinding those gears and you can keep tearing your life up and you can keep running your life in a ditch and you can almost kill yourself. And there's God standing at the top of a hill staring at you and waving you on saying, come on, child. Come on, father. Come on, mother. Come on. He said, just come on. And he just keeps waiting. And he keeps waving. He'll let you drive again. Piano player, would you come this evening? Would you bow your heads with me as she comes? I wonder tonight, oh, if you'd just like to come. I'm sure that there's a lot in that sermon that could speak to you. You could come and thank God for your father, child. You can come, child, and thank God for your father. Or you who were a prodigal, you could come. Thank God that he waits on you. You can remember when you was out there in that hog pit and he just let you come back. God is a father. And there's nothing like a father. The best father I've ever had. I talk to him daily. I love to listen to his wisdom.